Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Anna Banana. Thank you for joining in. Now, this morning when I came into KHOI early in the morning, it was foggy, very beautiful. But the forecast for pretty much every single day of this week through Saturday is the same, sunny and mild. Days should be in the low 80s and high 70s at the beginning of the week and may cool off just a bit later starting Thursday to stay in the low 70s and maybe even in the high 60s on Friday. Nights should be in the 50s, good sleeping weather, in the high 50s, and at the end of the week, dropping down a bit to the low end of the 50s as the week goes on. So before we go to the news, just a minute about the wild ones. Last weekend, I was working late at KHOI, Friday night, and you may remember it was still very hot last weekend. Front door to the station was open to the street, and I had a bunch of things lying on the floor that I was working on, and towards the end of the night, I was surprised to see a praying mantis sitting on top of what I was working on. It was about 8 inches long, with remarkably long and thin, really, really thin legs that all move independently of each other. Very interesting to watch. I got down on the floor next to it to photograph it. It was tilting its head back and forth to alternate, pointing its enormous pyramid-shaped eyes at me. He started to dance, which was, of course, looked very cute to us there because the radio was already playing music. But I began to realize that it was unhappy about me being there. And then he started to walk forward, extending his front arms in alternating fashion towards me with hands bent down, very much like what I think is called the praying mantis pose in karate. And I realized he was advancing on me. And I got to say, I was impressed. Anyway, I don't think the radio station was a good place for him, so I found a jar to capture him and take him outside. He had a different idea, which I did not fully grasp at the time. He climbed on top of the jar when I reached it towards him, and I figured I could just carry him out like that and started to the door, but then he jumped off the jar and flew right into my face, attacking me head on. And I hadn't really realized they could fly, although it was kind of obvious that they have really big wings. So a tussle ensued. He ended up in the flower bed. I hope he's okay. I looked up praying mantises afterwards and found a whole genre of very beautiful photographic and video work depicting the praying mantis dance. And I read two explanations of the dance. One is that they hope to camouflage themselves as a leaf shaking in the wind when they dance. And the other is that the males do so to impress a mate, very much like a prairie chicken dances. However, with the mantis, the male infamously ends up getting his head bitten off by the female, whom he manages to attract. But I just have to say, when you consider the difference in size between him and me, that was one bold insect. I talked to Pat Schlarbaum about the praying mantis, our environmentalist, and he said, Mark Edwards over in Boone, he says praying mantises have a major attitude. Okay, on that note, here's Dennis Hart with a summary of Iowa stories in the news last week.
The coronavirus continued to make news around Iowa in a big way last week. The number of deaths continued to go up, reaching 1,218 by yesterday afternoon. The number of infections also kept rising, surpassing 74,500 by yesterday. The White House Coronavirus Task Force sent a new report to the state saying that Iowa had the third highest rate of new cases in the nation over the previous week. That actually was an improvement from a week earlier, when the state had the nation's highest rate of new cases. The latest White House report said Iowa's confirmed cases per 100,000 was more than twice the national average. And White House experts again said, as they did the week before, that bars should be closed in 61 Iowa counties. Last month, Governor Kim Reynolds ordered bars in 6 Iowa counties, including Story, to close. Last week, the governor and Iowa's top health official both said they're confident the state's count of coronavirus deaths is correct, in spite of claims that the numbers have been inflated. The week before, Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Joni Ernst said she thought death statistics could have been inflated to exaggerate the pandemic's severity. She later walked back that statement. Meanwhile, Cedar Falls approved a mask mandate last week, joining other cities that already had approved them, including Ames, Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, Decorah, Dubuque, Iowa City, Muscatine, Waterloo, and Mount Vernon. Governor Reynolds has not approved a statewide mask order because she has said it would not be enforceable. And she said last week that in spite of photos showing her at public events without face coverings, those pictures do not show her general practices when it comes to protection against the coronavirus. In Polk County last week, a judge denied a request by the Des Moines Public School District for a temporary injunction that would have allowed the district to legally hold all its classes remotely. The district was challenging Governor Reynolds' order that at least half of school classes must be held in person, in spite of the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. The Des Moines School District will meet tomorrow to try to decide whether to stay online only. At a news conference last Thursday, the governor said the district is the only one in the state that does not have a pandemic-era instruction plan that complies with state rules, and she urged district officials to meet with her team to come up with a plan. Also last week, state officials gave Iowa City Public Schools a two-week extension to teach all classes online, as the district continues to try to avoid the spread of the coronavirus among students and staff. The new two-week waiver will allow classes in Iowa City to be conducted online through October 6th. In West Des Moines, word last week that an elementary school was going to online-only instruction after more than one-third of its staff either tested positive for the coronavirus or was in quarantine because of close contact with someone who has the disease. And Crossroads Park Elementary also said three of its students had tested positive for the virus. The school announced that it would have in-person instruction and provide only online learning, and that it would apply for a waiver from the State Department of Education to continue online learning through September 25th. Meanwhile, in Des Moines, hundreds of students, athletes, parents, and supporters marched from Roosevelt High School to the governor's mansion at Terrace Hill to protest the Iowa Department of Education's decision to suspend all sports and activities for school districts who opt for 100% virtual instruction during the coronavirus pandemic. The march included students from all five Des Moines Public School District high schools, as well as from Ames, another district that voted to start the new school year online. Later last week, Governor Reynolds addressed the issue. She said if students cannot be in school safely because of the coronavirus, it makes no sense to have extracurricular activities. Also in Des Moines last week, Mayor Frank County announced the city would keep its administration buildings closed to the public until December 1st. Those buildings were scheduled to reopen next month. The extended closures include the Des Moines City Hall, the Municipal Service Center, Public Works Buildings, and the Office for the Civil and Human Rights Department. In Ames last week, there was word that Iowa State University Athletic Director Jamie Pollard had suggested that the city of Ames pick up the cost of keeping the university's Stevens Auditorium afloat. Pollard defended his suggestion to shut down the campus performance venue, suggesting the city could pick up the $1 million cost to keep it open, if Stevens is important to the citizens of Ames. The university owns Stevens Auditorium, but management of the entire Iowa State Center complex, including Stevens, belongs to the athletic department. In a statement later in the week, ISU President Wendy Winterstein said the school is committed to working together with the athletic department to develop a plan to keep Stevens Auditorium open. In other news last week, a report by the Iowa Ombudsman's Office raised new questions about the starvation death of 16-year-old Sabrina Ray in Perry in 2017. The girl's foster parents were sent to prison for their roles in Sabrina's death. The new report said the State Department of Health had failed to take action that might have saved the girl's life. Also last week, the Des Moines Register reported on how courts and courtrooms were getting ready around the state for the resumption of in-person trials starting today, after months of being shut down because of the coronavirus. In the Polk County Courthouse, face coverings will be required, and everyone will have their temperature taken as they enter. Visitors will be asked questions to screen them for the coronavirus. Inside the courthouse, yellow and black tape will block off seats in courtroom galleries. There was also word last week that the Iowa National Guard had held a send-off ceremony at Camp Dodge in Johnston for 37 soldiers who will be deployed to Kosovo for a NATO mission later this month. Send-off ceremonies for other units bound for Kosovo were set to be held in Boone, Sioux City, and Johnston yesterday, Sunday. The soldiers are part of the biggest deployment of the Iowa National Guard in support of the Kosovo NATO mission since 2004. In Fort Dodge last Thursday, a cyber attack forced the school district to cancel all classes. The attack took out phone and internet servers. Meanwhile, voters in several central Iowa school districts went to the polls last Tuesday and approved funding for new construction and renovation projects. Voters in Waukee approved a $205 million bond for the construction of two middle schools, an elementary school, a pool facility, and improvements to existing buildings. In the Southeast Polk School District, voters approved a $92 million bond issue, which will be used for a new 6th and 7th grade building, as well as a new multi-purpose stadium. Voters in the Saydell School District approved a $23 million bond issue, while voters in the Bondurant-Farrar School District also approved a $23 million bond. On the jobless front last week, word that 5,689 people in Iowa had filed first-time unemployment claims in the previous week. There was also word last week that the city of Des Moines would take ownership of its most toxic site, a former manufacturing plant site that had been tied up in legal battles for decades. The 43-acre property east of the east bank of the Raccoon River and south of the Martin Luther King Jr. Parkway had soil contaminated with various chemicals. The deal would pave the way for redevelopment of a prime piece of real estate. There was good news for drivers in Des Moines last week. After 2 years of construction, the Locust Street Bridge was open to traffic again. Locust Street is one of four roads over the Des Moines River connecting downtown with the East Village. The bridge has parallel parking and single one-way lanes in each direction. The city paid $10 million on bridge upgrades. Also last week, word that the Matigua Boy Scout camp south of Boone had suffered more than $1 million damage from the derecho windstorm that blew through the area last month. Fortunately, no Boy Scouts were there because camp had ended for the summer, but the windstorm damaged 49 buildings. Now the Boy Scouts of America Mid-Iowa Council is trying to raise the money to repair the damage. Meanwhile, last week, the good news was much of the state of Iowa received some much-needed rain. The bad news was the U.S. Department of Agriculture said that the rain had not ended the state's drought. As of Thursday, about 95% of the state was still abnormally dry or in a drought. Every county in Iowa was affected by the drought, including 44 that were considered to be in severe drought. On the political front this past Saturday night, Democrats held their first ever drive-in Polk County steak fry. About 900 people sat in cars at the Des Moines Waterworks Park as volunteers delivered meals carside. Democratic Vice Presidential nominee Kamala Harris appeared virtually on two large video screens, telling the crowd that she and presidential nominee Joe Biden were thankful for the work they were doing to win the election for Democrats. Normally, the annual steak fry attracts thousands of people, but it was scaled down this year because of the coronavirus. And of course, by now you know that the long-anticipated opening game of Iowa State University's football season took place, without fans, at Jack Trice Stadium this past Saturday. And you know that Iowa State lost that game, and lost badly, 31-14. One more note before I go, and it's a personal one. Some of the good folks here at KHOI have been wondering about how we're doing out here in California, given that much of the state has been burning up. Sharon and I are doing fine. We are not in the path of any of the fires. We have had smoke and ash in the air, and we've been continually warned about unhealthy air quality. We've been told to stay inside many days because the air outside is too bad to breathe. That's easy to do. What's not easy is watching all these fires here in California and up the coast in Oregon and Washington. They've scorched millions of acres, caused dozens of deaths, and burned hundreds of homes. That has been heartbreaking. And unfortunately, fire season in Southern California has not even started yet. Sunday's Los Angeles Times ran a front-page banner headline reading, California's Climate Apocalypse, and stories are popping up in the Times and other major national newspapers about people who have decided to leave the state permanently. So far, we are not among those people. Not yet. That's our situation here. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back on Friday with word about what's been going on in Ames. Between now and then, let's all try our best to stay safe and stay healthy as we attempt to get through everything that's been tossed our way in this unforgettable year.
Rage Against the Machine with Sleep Now and Fire. Miss those guys. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I thank Dennis Hart for the news summary, and we all wish for his safety in beautiful California as the West Coast burns. Election season is upon us, and it has been said, politics is local. Candidates for offices representing Story County residents have been invited to respond to questions concerning disability issues hosted by agencies NAMI Central Iowa and the ARC of Story County. These two organizations will host this online candidates forum on disability issues, and you are invited to attend via Zoom. This will be on Wednesday, September 16th, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. The address for requesting a link to the forum is pretty long and complex, so we'll post this at our website, khoifm.org, right after the show today, and I'm sure our guests will also tell you how to find it. Now, our own Anna Banana is with us earlier than usual on Local Talk. She usually comes at the end, but I've asked her to be here at the beginning because, in reality, Anna Banana is actually the director of I Am Able Iowa, which provides support needed when we experience disability. Anna, could you start us off with a heart-to-heart message, though?
Yeah, thank you, Ursula. So I wanted to read Tom Harkin's Celebrating the Americans Disabilities Act, and he posted this in the Ability magazine. As we all know, this year marks the 20th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. As a chief sponsor of the ADA in the Senate, I will always remember the day it was signed into law, July 26, 1990, as one of the very proudest in my legislative career. We have come a long way in the last 20 years. Before the ADA, life was very different for people with disabilities, and discrimination was both commonplace and accepted. Today, we recognize that, like all people, people with disabilities have unique abilities, talents, and aptitudes, and America is far better, fairer, and richer when we make full use of these gifts. Every individual with a disability deserves a chance to realize the four great goals of the ADA: equal opportunity, full participation, independent living, and economic self-sufficiency. So to those of you who are on the front lines in the struggle, I thank you for the work you do every day to ensure that ADA is alive and vibrant in your communities, opening doors of opportunity, and breaking down barriers of discrimination. And so, speaking of those who are on the front lines in the struggle, we do have Angela Tharp, Executive Director of NAMI Central Iowa, and Tricia Crane, Executive Director of the ARC of Story County. For the listener who may not know your organizations, please tell us a few words what NAMI and the ARC of Story County do, and we'll start with Angela, please.
Thank you, Anna Banana. We are really, really, really thankful to be here today. NAMI Central Iowa provides support, education, and advocacy for individuals living with mental illness and for their families, friends, coworkers, neighbors that care for them. Because as we know, mental illness does not only affect the person with the illness, it affects all who love and care for them. We provide the support throughout 11 counties through Central Iowa. We're not just in Story County. However, that is where our office is at. And our wellness center, where individuals who would like a safe place to come and just visit or hang out, they are welcome to do so at our wellness center on 424 Fifth Street. If you're familiar with Ms. Meyer's consignment, you will find us.
Tricia, how do they find you, and what is the ARC of Story County?
The ARC of Story County strives to enrich the lives of people living in Story County who have intellectual and developmental disabilities. We are best known for our social and recreational program that runs almost every single night of the week when we do not have a pandemic going on, that offers social and recreational opportunities for people living in Story County who have a disability. We oversee and coordinate all of the Special Olympic activities for about 175 local athletes. We also have respite services, care coordination, and our Project Search employment program that we're very proud of that is hosted by Iowa State University.
And so, Tricia, what's happening on Wednesday?
Wednesday is our biannual candidate forum that we co-host with NAMI Central Iowa every 2 years. Normally, it takes place at the Ames Public Library, and people are able to go and listen and hear what all of the candidates have to say with regards specifically to disability-related issues. However, this year, since everything is taking place virtually, we have a link. I'm sure NAMI does on their website. We do on our website, our Facebook pages, where you can register to listen to the candidates speak about disability-related issues, specifically for our constituents living in Story County.
You have quite a range of candidates that will be participating. Just to name a few: Teresa Greenfield, Joni Ernst, J.D. Schulten, Ross Wilburn, Lisa Heddens.
So we did go beyond our scope a little this year and invite the U.S. congressional candidates. So yeah, we were very excited when they RSVP'd and said they were coming. I will have to say, though, that Joni Ernst has backed out. So I don't want to mislead people that Joni Ernst will be there. But Teresa Greenfield, who's running against her, J.D. Schulten. Then we have our three Story County supervisor candidates who are attending, and several of our Iowa U.S. local representatives. There was about 10 invited. We've heard back from about half of them, but several candidates just end up showing up that night and don't necessarily let us know that they are attending.
You'll also have Cindy Opal Passion and
yes.
Wessel Crochelle, Robert Bacon, Dave DeVoe, Latifa Fall, and Steve O'Rourke, and Lisa Heddens.
Yes, mm-hmm. The last three are the three county supervisors. Angela and I both reached out to our members and the people we serve, asking specifically for questions that they may have for the candidates. And so we ask each of the three different county supervisors, the local Iowa representatives, and then the U.S. congressional representatives, we ask them each their own set of questions based off of disability issues for Story County.
Angela, will you be moderating this?
I will be in attendance, but Tricia actually is the moderator.
We have Dr. Linda Hagedorn, who is the president of the League of Women Voters. She's the retired dean of the College of Human Sciences at Iowa State. Dr. Hagedorn has actually agreed to be our moderator for the evening.
In 2020, approximately 23% of the American electorate, over 35 million individuals, will be people with disabilities who want to probably participate actively and be engaged citizens. Even after 30 years after the passage of the ADA Act, 60 to 80% of polling places still remain inaccessible. And so what are the things that we think moving forward to make individuals with disabilities empowered to be able to vote are these kind of forms?
Yes. Every year, the ARC of Story County gets better about advocating for our constituents in regards to getting them out there to vote. For example, in January of this year, we worked with the Story County League of Women Voters and held a mock caucus so that our members and those with intellectual and developmental disabilities knew how to go caucus and knew that it would be a loud environment and crazy environment. And how do you get your voices heard? I think this year more than ever, it was prevalent in the media that people with disabilities can't necessarily go caucus because facilities are not adequate for them to be able to do so. And so as we continue to move forward and realize that everyone needs to be included, this will, you know, remain on the forefront for every election season.
Angela and Tricia, so this is an interesting partnership between NAMI and ARC of Story Counties. Angela, if you wouldn't mind sharing about this partnership and why NAMI and ARC partnered together for this particular forum.
This partnership started in 2010, so I believe we're on our fifth forum. NAMI is very much a part of advocacy. One of the events that we're going to have Saturday, October 17th through Zoom, again, due to the pandemic, will be called NAMI Smarts for Advocacy. And it's a short 6-hour training just to help individuals who are passionate about making sure their voices are heard. NAMI Smarts for Advocacy would be a great tool. I know for me, I had never been to the Capitol. I had never spoken directly there to any of the state representatives. And so this training helped me to condense my story so that candidates listen and you make an impact. And so I believe, honestly, Anna, that's where this started, was that combination of individuals just needing to be heard, needing their stories heard, the real life impact of how laws do affect everyone, especially those that maybe are a little bit more of the voiceless.
Thank you so much for joining us. Angela Tharp, Executive Director of NAMI Central Iowa, and Tricia Crane, Executive Director of the ARC of Story County. We'll be sure to post the information how to participate in this forum on Wednesday on our websites.
Thank you, Anna Banana.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, we have, I believe, room for up to 100 individuals to join us via Zoom. So please hurry to one of our websites or your website. Get your complimentary ticket today. Once you receive that, you then will receive a Zoom link so that you can join.
And the phone number that you can call for that is 292-9400, right?
That is correct. 515-292-9400.
Okay. And then again, KHOI will link on our website, khoifm.org, to other places that you can go to connect with the Zoom meeting. Thank you so much, Angela and Tricia, for joining us. Let's take a quick break, and then when we get back, we're going to talk about Stevens Auditorium. After a musical break, we'll come back hearing the voice of former longtime senior vice president at Iowa State, Warren Madden, talking about Iowa State Center, its vision and meaning. Let's take a break for a minute, and we will be right back.
President Hilton, you know, had a vision to develop the Iowa State Center. You probably couldn't afford to build that today. It's really worked out. So then, you know, you got to give Hilton credit for having the vision to think it up. The center is a great complex. It's got good accessibility with parking. The buildings are great. There are very few places in the country that have that sort of complex put together. The acoustics in Stevens Auditorium are almost as good as any place in the country, mm-hmm. and most of the professionals that come in will indicate that. Those facilities are remarkable. You know, I've been at Iowa State since the Iowa State Center was constructed. Comes pretty close to being one of those really monumental changes. Before the Iowa State Center, concerts were held in the Armory, basketball and wrestling events and all of that. Of all the things that have happened in Ames and at Iowa State, I really do think the Iowa State Center has probably had as much of an impact. It have probably changed the culture of this community and even the university. Actual construction work started down there, you know, in the late 1960s. And so as a younger staff member, when it first got started, I had the opportunity to be around the people that planned the Iowa State Center. It became the sort of volunteer leaders, and they went out and raised the money. I was around the edges of all of that as a staff member and did some of the sort of gopher work, helped make it happen. And I was really impressed with all of that. And I had the head of the music department back then, you know, went to New York City and came back without really getting anybody's approval and said, I've lined up the New York Philharmonic to come and do this week of concerts in Ames, Iowa. And Platt, who I was around, thought that the place was going to go financially bankrupt to have this New York orchestra come to Iowa and do, you know, a series of concerts that week. And it turned out to be a spectacular success. And the Ames International Festival Orchestra Association kind of emerged out of that experience. And we were fortunate to have that, and that kicked off this sort of fine arts cultural programming. Mm-hmm. And that's continued as things have evolved in the concert business and the fine arts area. It's a lot of variety. And the Iowa State Center as a complex has had some interesting events. For me, a lot of times it's fun to go do what you do during the day, and then that evening or on a weekend you get to go down and listen to a concert, or you get to go to a lecture or a speaker, and I enjoy that. Plus, the people that come to these things generally are positive and supportive, and I enjoy that. And I think Iowa State's produced a lot of great alumni who have a real passion for Iowa State, and it's kind of fun to get to interact with them, and it's kind of fun to get to be around people like that and talk with them. I think it's good for our students that come to Iowa State. It's good for our recruitment of faculty. I think if you talk with groups like the McFarland Clinic, they'll indicate that as they try and recruit doctors and physicians to Ames, having access to these kinds of things, places. I'm hoping we can continue to provide a cross-section of events. I think it is a special place.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for the hour, and Warren Madden spoke with us here at KHOI in 2013 about Stevens Auditorium and the whole inception of the Iowa State Center. But that was then, and this is now. See why Stevens is in the news these days, as you probably already know. Iowa State Athletics Director Jamie Pollard penned a letter on September 4th to fans recommending that the Iowa State University respond to a $30 million deficit with layoffs or payroll reductions, eliminating sports, and closing C.Y. Stevens Auditorium. A few days later, he tweeted a follow-up statement saying, "Our budget letter on Friday sparked a lot of emotion. Many in Ames community do not want the university to stop funding the subsidy of community members' tickets to performing arts events. We thought this statement may provide more clarity to the challenge we all face." And then he provided a document, and I'm only reading sections in the interest of time. ISU transferred the Iowa State Center to athletics to no longer subsidize the cost of providing community members the ability to attend performances at C.Y. Stevens at the expense of faculty compensation and services to students. According to Pollard, due to damages from COVID-19, the university is having to choose between continuing to subsidize community access to performing arts events or eliminating services to students, i.e. dropping a sport, or laying off employees. He said, "Perhaps the city of Ames and the city council should step up and help fund the $1 million shortfall of keeping C.Y. Stevens if it's important to the citizens of Ames." So this raises a lot of questions as well as a lot of emotional responses, I'm sure. We have asked Tammy Kuhlbeck, Executive Director of the Iowa State Center, to join us here to ask her about what is happening. First off, in the interest of transparency, we should say that Tammy just recently joined the KHOI Board of Directors as well. But now she is wearing the hat of Director of ISU Center. Welcome, Tammy, and thank you for coming on Local Talk. First of all, to be clear, is Jamie Pollard, in fact, in a position to actually defund C.Y. Stevens Auditorium?
The Iowa State Center, which is comprised of Stevens Auditorium, the Scheman Building, and Fisher Theater, was transferred to the oversight of the Athletics Department. July, August of 2019, we had been answering up through the Senior VP of Business and Financial Services. July 1st, 2020, the five-year contract for the three buildings that I just spoke about ended on June 30th. And on July 1st, VenueWorks, the company I work for, who's been managing the buildings for the last 5 years, signed a contract with Athletics to run Stevens Auditorium only. And Athletics is running both the Scheman Building and the Fisher Theater. So we answer up through Athletics. However, I think that I did see a note in the paper last week from the Athletic Department that said Mr. Pollard was recommending it, that he would not be able to close it without permission from the university and or Board of Regents, I believe.
Let's talk about the numbers. I don't think anybody disagrees that hard times are here. Iowa State is having some really strong financial challenges due to COVID-19. Statements have been made about the finances at Stevens Auditorium, and the number that jumps out and is being heard on everybody's lips is a $1 million shortfall. Is there a shortfall, and what does exactly that $1 million represent?
I think these numbers have been in place since the mid-2000s when Hilton was peeled off of the Iowa State Center and went to Athletics. There's a subsidy out there of about $778,000, or an allocation that helped towards utilities. That is money that comes from Iowa State University. That allocation offset utilities and some maintenance. So 100% of the Stevens operating expenses, which is personnel, programming, marketing, the day-to-day operations, are paid for by our operating revenues. But ISU does fund maintenance and utilities for all three buildings and does, in this new contract, still provide the funding for the utilities, which at Stevens we're thinking will run between $400,000 and $500,000 this year. Probably be a little lower because of COVID. We're not using as much electricity since we're not doing as many events. And then they absolutely help fund the maintenance and then the long-term capital improvements and repair expenses. You know, the $1 million for just Stevens is probably high, but the university does support everything but operating. So they do the support of the maintenance and the utilities, and they do other buildings on campus.
You're saying that there's probably around $700,000 in subsidies from Iowa State. Where do you see the $1 million number coming from?
I'm thinking the almost $1 million that they put out there was, if you look at our financials in FY19 and our unaudited FY20 financials, there's a line item called ISU allocation, and that's about $949,000 and change. And in that $949,000 and change is about $170,000 in rent that the museums pay for their space in Scheman, and that the theater department pays for in Fisher.
So how much does that amount to?
That's about $170,000 out of that $949,000, and then the rest is that $778,000. It's actually $777,893, and that number has not changed for, I'm guessing, at least 10 years. We've been working with that same amount of money.
What I hear you saying, if I get you correctly, is the rest of the money is either raised by Stevens itself through tickets or is an exchange of goods and services in that facility's being rented out, and that's income from the enterprise itself.
Right, right. So when we had all three buildings, our budget was about almost $5 million. And out of that, $777,000 did come from an allocation from the university. And then we had that $170,000 in rent money as well. Now moving forward in our new budget, since it's only Stevens, when we planned FY21, we looked at a number of different scenarios. And, you know, with COVID, without COVID, with COVID going away in November or going away in January, like everyone else, our business model with masks gatherings is changing daily as we speak. I think we were at about 2.2 or 2.3 million is what we thought our budget would be. And out of that, the allocation from the university was going to be around $500,000.
You're anticipating $500,000 in what the university would give a subsidy.
Correct.
Now, there was another part of the narrative. Pollard states that the ISU subsidizes the cost of providing the ability to attend performances to community and the community members, and that that's at the expense of the faculty at Iowa State and student services, that the university, in a sense, is subsidizing the community and the community should pay for this. Does C.Y. Stevens serve the community instead of Iowa State? Does it serve the community more than Iowa State?
We have a big mix of programming at the Iowa State Center at Stevens. We really are all things to all people, I think, which is just underscores the importance of the building and the community. Over the last 3 years, our programming mix is about a third university. About 12% of our programming is our performing arts series. Another 10% is our concerts and comedians like the Avett Brothers or Ringo Starr. The Stevens Performing Arts Series would include the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra, The Waitress, Beautiful, shows like that. Our Youth Matinee Series, which is an endowed Youth Matinee Series from Martha Ellen Tye, is about 7%. We have about 30% of rentals, which we consider to be non-university events like Opus and Ballet Des Moines and the Children's Choir, along with the several dance studios. And then about 8% comes from ACVB or the ISU Conference and Planning and Management, which are meetings, 4-H, those types of things. So we have a really good mix. And we find that as far as anybody that buys a ticket, we find that about 27-28% come from Ames Story County. Another 25% come from 30 to 60 miles. And then anybody 60 miles plus, that's about 50%. That would include parents that are coming in. We sell tickets to the music events, all of the band and choral concerts. So a lot of that may be parents coming in. And certainly because of our programming of contemporary shows, like I mentioned before, we do drive some economic impact with people coming from out of town.
From what you're saying, sounds very much like the relationship the university and Ames have in general, the very diverse kind of intertwined mix of people that come here because of the university and for other reasons as well. It sounds like in terms of actual subsidy, we're looking at around $500,000 from Iowa State University. In an email you sent out recently, you have asked the Friends of C.Y. Stevens to step up and help with expenses.
The $500,000 really is for utility and just the kind of day-to-day repairs. If we had an emergency repair, example, if we had a waterline break or an HVAC unit go down, the university is responsible for that as well. So, you know, in some years we may have a little bit of facilities planning and maintenance on campus. They have a budget for all the general fund buildings of which we fall under. So there may be some more money coming out of that. So, for example, we had two windows broken on August 10th in the derecho. Those will be covered by insurance, yet we'll have a deductible on that insurance claim. So I would just add that to the discussion as well.
The president of Iowa State has indicated that she does support the continuation of C.Y. Stevens. What obviously all of us are dealing with a lot of unknowns because of COVID-19. Do you think that it's feasible to keep C.Y. Stevens open?
I can't even imagine it not being open. We have been taking steps. Our staff took pay cuts and started rolling furloughs right away on July 1st, even while we were doing events. So our footprint, we're trying to make it, you know, as small as we can to get us through COVID. We are such a small part of everyone's budget that I'm hopeful that we can find a way. And you did mention something about our Friends of Stevens, and we are really working to get in contact and get a plan going with the administration, with athletics, with the foundation. You know, right now we have our Stevens Performing Arts Fund. Those funds can only be used for programming. So we are looking forward to working with the administration and athletics and finding a way out of this to help limit the impact on the university and the athletic department.
Right at this exact moment, what happens now?
Right at this exact moment, as we were on Friday, September 4th, when this news broke, we go to work every day. We keep getting the job done. We show up, and that's exactly what we're doing. We have actors this weekend, limited capacity. We have our Goldfinch Room on Tuesday night out on the lawn on Stevens. And so we're still booking events for 2021 as we look into the spring and fall, when we're hopeful that COVID will allow us to start back up having full house events, not just partial house events. So we're just keep doing what we're doing.
Thank you so much, Tammy Kuhlbeck, the executive director of the Iowa State Center. Thank you so much for coming on and kind of helping us to unpack what exactly is happening with Stevens Auditorium. Keith Morgan, Story County Emergency Coordinator, is here. We'll be right back to talk to him. Thank you, Keith. I know you have a lot of really important information about disaster assistance, so let's get started without further ado.
There's a lot of different programs that are out there, and probably one of the best ways is to just go to our website, and we're going to have all of the different links to FEMA individual assistance, to SBA, to the agricultural assistance that's out there.
So can you just give us a little bit of a sense of what assistance is available?
First off, there's the one that most people have heard about, and that's the FEMA Individual Assistance Program. It is primarily designed for individuals and families who have suffered losses not covered by insurance, and that's a key part to it. They can provide grants to homeowners for things like basic home repairs to make a primary residence habitable, temporary rental insurance assistance for those that may have had to completely leave their house and that are in temporary facilities, and other such needs as essential personal property that was damaged. Also, lodging of expenses while they were unable to live in their house. Maybe, you know, they had to stay in a hotel. But it's essential for people to understand that what FEMA is trying to do with this is to make it so that people have some place to stay. So if there's trees that aren't threatening the house or anything like that, FEMA does not pay for that. Garages that are damaged, FEMA does not help out with that. Those are the homeowners' needs. These are just to make sure that people have some place to stay. They will also provide assistance to renters, again, temporary housing there or essential personal items that may have been damaged along the way. So those are the main ones that are through FEMA. It's fairly rare that we ever get this kind of assistance. And what people need to also understand is that it won't rebuild a house completely for most houses, because it does have a limit both on how much they will provide for the repairs to the house and also for the essential items that go to the houses. It is to supplement insurance that other people have.
In order to get this, you need to document the damage in photos or videos and save all your receipts and estimates from contractors, right?
Exactly. If you need to continue to remove debris or make repairs, continue to do that, but document every step along the way. Take pictures before you start any repairs, and make sure that what you are taking pictures of is not so much the tree on the house, but the actual structural damage. So if your roof rafters got damaged, get some good close-up pictures showing the damage to those actual rafters that need to be repaired. Get good estimates on what you're having done, and make sure that those are pretty detailed estimates that are outlining exactly the work that was done. What you have to show to FEMA is that these repairs were necessary, again, to make it so that the house is habitable. Also, remember that you're going to have to interact with your insurance company on this, because FEMA is going to want to know what your insurance company has paid, and or if you've had any assistance from any other program that the government runs to include state and federal programs so that they're not double paying for something that another agency may have already provided you assistance on theirs.
So when you say you have to interact with your insurance company, does that mean you have to get documentation from your insurance company as to what they will and will not cover so that you can submit that to FEMA? Is that what you mean by interacting?
Exactly. FEMA, they are covering losses not covered by insurance. So first starting place is to go to your insurance company, have them outline exactly what they are going to cover and what they're not going to cover. And then those losses and the work that it's going to take to make those repairs is what you will then take to FEMA to see if they will cover any other parts of that.
FEMA is the federal government. When you say take to FEMA, that seems kind of remote. How does one apply for this help?
There are two ways. First off, you can go to disasterassistance.gov, and disaster assistance is all spelled out, all one word, then .gov. Or you can call 800-621-3362. And they are doing this much more on a virtual and a remote process than they used to. COVID is part of it, and just plain the efficiency of process is driving this so that you will call in, you'll start to set up a case with FEMA, and they will work with you, and they'll outline exactly what you need to provide them. Then they'll start that process. Some of the required documentation, you're going to need to know, obviously, the address of the damaged property. It's got to be your primary residence. Description of the disaster caused damages and losses. So, again, not just that a tree fell on my roof. It is a tree fell on my roof, and it has damaged five of the trusses up there. I've had three holes through the deck of the roof. All of the insulation in the attic has been soaked due to these damages. Very, very specific. You're going to want a current mailing address. They're going to want your current phone number.
The phone number again?
800-621-3362. But more importantly, I'd say go to our website, storycountyiowa.gov/EMA. And we've got a link there for the derecho because FEMA is but one of the programs that's out there. We have the other programs listed on there so that even if you don't qualify for the FEMA program, you may qualify for this Disaster Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program. Or if you are more agriculturally based, we have information on the USDA programs that are out there. Or if you're a business, we have information on the SBA. So it's one area where we try and point people to. If that doesn't help, give us a call at 515-382-7315, and we can see if there are other programs that are out there. We can try and point in that direction.
So you're kind of the best first stop to figure out how to get help. Talk a little bit about the DSNAP Food Assistance Program.
It is a federal program. It's run through the USDA. This is for those that, due to the losses, their overall income may have been badly enough impacted that they will now prove temporarily to help them out with food. If you are already on the SNAP program, which helps people with food that are of a lower income, you are covered by that program.
When you say temporarily, this is in response to the derecho?
Correct. If they qualify, they receive food dollars on an EBT, an electronic benefits transfer that is equivalent to the maximum allotment of food assistance for their size households. For those that have had destroyed or spoiled food, a loss or no income due to the disaster, or they've had to make home repairs or temporary sheltering repairs that have financially impacted them to the point where it might make it risky for them to be able to continue to buy food.
Personal injury, right, is included in that? If you've suffered personal injury?
Yes, that is another one of the qualifying events for it. Like I said, it's going to run temporarily out of the Research Park Building Number 2, which is at 2625 North Loop Drive in Ames. That'll be from 8 to 4:30 starting on Tuesday and running through Saturday of this week.
So again, this week's from Tuesday through Saturday, you can apply for help with food costs. And again, it's at the Research Park.
Building number 2 at 2625 North Loop Drive in Ames.
When you go there to apply for this, what do you need to bring with you?
Why they have suffered damages and the impact on what they have for current income.
Information about your losses, right?
Exactly, and your current income. and also, you know, addresses show where you live, because you must be in one of the counties that has been declared for individual assistance, of which Story County, Boone County, Polk County have all qualified for that. When you do go, they are requiring that you wear a face mask, and it's important so that we can keep everybody safe. Please wear a face mask as you're interacting with these folks that are there to help you.
And finally, tell us a little bit what the Mid-Iowa Community Action is, MICA. What is that service?
MICA is another central point for a lot of the assistance programs that are there. So even if you were to not qualify income-wise for some of these programs, first off, they've had training on how to help people recover from disasters. So they will look at what the losses are, look at the possible different ways that you can take care of the damages and the losses, point you to any assistance that's there, but also help you kind of set up a budget and a pathway to getting back on your feet and being able to overcome these damages that you've had.
Okay. Thank you. So these are various avenues for finding help if you're having trouble recovering from the most recent storm. And again, the best, there's a lot of information also from the Small Business Administration, and some of it's detailed. And so the best thing is to really go to the website for StoryCountyIowa.gov, right? And figure out where you can find something for you if you need help.
Exactly. Because, again, there is such a diversity of people here in Story County, all the way from the agricultural to the urban. And we've tried to gather as many different pathways to help and assistance and put them on our website so that people can look through and determine what is the best assistance for them if they need it.
Okay. And if you don't use a computer to get assistance, the phone number is 515-382-7315. Is that correct?
That's correct.
382-7315. Thank you, Keith. Any parting words?
Great, great work by a lot of volunteer organizations and a lot of hard work by people just helping out and each other in our cities as we suffered probably one of the most widespread destructive events that Story County has ever experienced with the derecho. And it's an example of why we need to be prepared. This is Preparedness Month. Food and water in your basement, weather radio so that you can hear when there's a derecho coming and you can take appropriate actions. We're very lucky that we didn't have anybody seriously injured, but I attribute that to the warning and people taking actions as as this event moved through.
It's just another one of these things that makes 2020 memorable, right, Keith?
This is definitely a year that the emergency management community will forever remember.
Yeah, as if a pandemic wasn't enough. Well, and it's important to know where you can get help if you need it, and that the county emergency services is really working to pull that together so that if you need help, you can contact them and find out if you're eligible for one of these supports. And then you've got FEMA for personal assistance for homeowners and renters and businesses. And then you've got DSNAP, which is food assistance due to loss of this, due to loss from the storm. And then Mid-Iowa Action, Community Action, which is disaster case management, correct?
And Small Business Administration for loans for homeowners, renters, and business owners.
Please give out again the website where folks can find this information. And if you don't have a computer, what number can they call?
Sure. Our website is StoryCountyIowa, all spelled out, all one word, .gov/EMA, and our phone number is 515-382-7315.
Thank you so much, Keith, for really helping to spell this out and for the incredible amount of work and support that you provide at this county level. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We've been hearing from Keith Morgan, who is the Story County Emergency Management Coordinator. And see you next month.
Thank you. Take care.
And you have been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg, here with Anna Banana. Thank you for listening. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. here at KHOI. Also, remember, you can hear a recording of this show later today online, and links to the lots of information and guests that you heard during the program today. KHOI has an online auction house. Please go to khoifm.org and click on the big auction house button to make your bid on some really great items from artists and hosts at KHOI. And the money all goes to support KHOI. So again, it's the auction house button at khoifm.org, and you've got only 34 days left to bid. Anna, you want to take us out for the rest of the show?
Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You also heard Rage Against the Machine with Sleep Now in the Fire. Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.